I mean, now I want to go even briefer about existence and about the Groth and Lichtenmüller group. Okay, so existence is along the same lines. So I say, maybe I'll just even put it in the same place. So suppose you found an associator that works up to degree 7. Okay? So up to degree 6. So suppose phi satisfies the pentagon, and again I'm ignoring the hexagon, it's the same. It's just an extra layer of symbolism, but not really change of content. Okay? So suppose phi satisfies the pentagon to degree 6. I want to improve it so that it will satisfy the pentagon in degree 7. Okay? So consider phi prime, which will be phi plus lowercase phi, and where the degree of lowercase phi is equal to 7. I want to see whether the resulting thing will satisfy the pentagon, or I want to choose a lowercase phi so that the resulting thing will satisfy the pentagon. So I write the pentagon for phi prime. Why exactly did I erase it? I don't know why exactly I erased it. It's the exact same thing, okay? So I write the pentagon for phi prime. So d4 phi plus phi, d2 phi plus phi, d0 phi plus phi is equal to d1 phi plus phi, times d3 phi plus phi, and I only care about it modulo degree 8, because, you know, degree 8 I will do tomorrow. Okay? So, what do I get? Well, I open parentheses, as always, and I get phi. So, you see, the term that has all the phi's in it now does not satisfy the pentagon. That's exactly my problem. I want to fix it so that it will satisfy the pentagon. But it doesn't. It doesn't yet satisfy the pentagon. So I cannot just drop it. So I have d4 phi. So if I only take phi's, okay, I'll get d4 phi times d2 phi times d0 phi is equal to d1 phi, uppercase phi, times d3 uppercase phi. But then I have to add on both sides the terms that I will get from lowercase phi. What am I doing? These are uppercases. But lowercase phi is of degree 7, and I care only about degree 7. I don't care about degree 8. So I'll get the usual thing. So here I'll get plus d4 phi plus d2 phi plus d0 phi. And here I will get plus d1 phi plus d3 phi. Lowercase phi this time. Okay? And my camera was eaten by aliens. No. So let me rewrite this. So move all the lowercase phi to one side, and you'll get d of phi. the usual. Move all the uppercase phis to the other side, and you'll get something which I will call mu. I don't know what it is, mu. But really, what is mu? Mu is the mistake in the pentagon, right? It's exactly the difference of the two sides of the pentagon. So it's the mistake in the pentagon for phi in degree 7. So phi, the pre-associator I started from satisfies the pentagon to degree 6. So the mistake will be in degree, will start in degree 7. Okay? So it's again a homological equation, or an equation that looks like it comes from homology. So I need I need to know that d mu is equal to 0. Okay? Is it clear? I just need to show that whatever mistake happens in the pentagon, its d has to be 0. Okay? But notice that by now, I live here. So the so this is A of 4 strands, and it's going into A of... So mu lives in A of 4 strands. The mistake, the pentagon lives on 4 strands, so mu lives here. And d mu lives on 5 strands, and that's why I mentioned that I need 5. Okay? Anyway, here's the proof that the mistake is equal to 0. Okay? So... it's a schematic proof, obviously. But have you seen it before, by the way? Some people must recognize it. It's the Stashev associahedron. So basically, you start from a mu, you start from a pentagon. Okay, so you see, rather than writing the pentagon, I just wrote the vertices of the pentagon. So you start from a pentagon, here mu, it's surrounded by a pentagon where, what? What's going on here? Mu? Sorry, something broke in the copying. I mean, it's not all mu's. What? I'm using the... It's the wrong diagram. Sorry, something failed. Give me 2 seconds to try to find it straight on the back again on the web. So, in fact, this way you know where it comes from. So I go to my publications, non-associative tangles. Here is the paper. And let's go to the to the page where this appears. Here. Yes. I'm sorry. Okay. But now let me enlarge it a bit. How do you enlarge? I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know why the photocopying failed, but anyway, sorry. Here is the ordinary hexagon. Okay? So, if you look at this pentagon drawn here, you will find that it's an ordinary pentagon. It's the same parenthetization as in the ordinary pentagon, except they're all multiplied by an E on the right. Okay? So write the 5 corresponding to the edges. You'll get a product of 5 5, of 5 5s. Okay? Some of them with inverses. I didn't bother to mark the orientations, but some of them will come with inverses. And the product of these five phis will be a pentagon with one extra edge on the right. So it will be, so if I look at degree 7, I will get a mistake. And the mistake will be mu installed on strands 1, 2, and 3, and 4. Okay, and I guess the signs comes out minus because my orientation was somehow something the wrong way, okay? But now, look at the phi that appears along this edge, okay? Again, it's not quite a phi, it's a phi placed on some strands. It turns out that the same phi, the same formula, also occurs if you look at the ordinary pentagon and double the first strand. Take the ordinary pentagon and double the first strand. Okay? You'll get a new pentagon in which, you see, the first strand was doubled. So here, instead of just A, I get A times B. A times B, A times B, A times B, A times B. Okay? So I can replace, so in the product of five things, I can replace one of the edges by a, so instead of, so basically, if you look at the product around this combined polygon, okay, then it's made of two pentagons. And the first pentagon will contribute a mistake, mu 1, 2, 3, 4, and the second pentagon will contribute this mistake. Now, on this pentagon, there is an edge that fits into another pentagon. And just keep going this way. Okay? And the lovely thing is that this is a polytop, which is, it's a sphere at the end. So, I mean, it's a, the outside face also is an identity that is satisfied, or that is measured. So, overall, you get that a certain sum of six, or that a certain sum of six mistakes in the pentagon must be zero, because, you know, it closes on itself. So that's the proof of d mu equal to zero. I hope this is more or less understandable. Now, this is only half the story, because the rest of the story involves the hexagon, and maybe that's the place to show that where the hexagon comes, like the same, you know, you also need some comparison between the mistake in the pentagon and the mistake in the hexagon. And you get them from various polytops that have both hexagons and pentagons in them. So you need all four of these in order to actually get to control all the mistakes in both the pentagon and the hexagons. Anyway, this done, the problem reduces to homology, and the homology is computed in the same way, okay? Which I haven't shown, and the problem is solved. Again, it is solved only for non-horizontal chords. For horizontal chords, the homology is actually not known. So if you can compute the corresponding homology for horizontal chords, it will be lovely. Okay, and then the last comment that I want to say very briefly is about the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, so about GT. So, okay, if you look at parenthesized braids and mod it out by M plus 1 singular parenthesized braids. So in exact same way as we did in the case of knots. Okay? What?
What is M?
a number. Pick a number m, pick an integer m, and take parenthesized braids and mod out by m plus 1 singular parenthesized braids. So in other words, allow linear combinations and mod out by parenthesized braids that also are allowed to have a certain number of double points.
But this is arbitrary
chosen
M.
Arbitrary new parameter, not seen before. Okay? Yeah. Well, seen before as the as the degree of a finite type invariant. Okay? What I mean by that is, again, consider a double point to be over minus under, and then mod out by that. Okay? And then Z, well, Z map m plus 1 singular things to something of degree m plus 1. So this will map PAB into PACD modulo degree m plus 1. So instead of looking at all core diagrams, you will be looking only at core diagrams up to degree m. And the point is that now it's an isomorphism.
Maybe if you write Z... M.
Oh, okay, ZM, Z up to degree M. Fine. So the point is that this is an isomorphism. Okay? Even this will become clearer a bit later. I mean, it will become clearer a bit later. I only want to give the flavor, okay? But furthermore, it's not a unique isomorphism because Z is not unique. Okay? So in fact, there are many such isomorphisms, one for each Z. But the Zs are determined by associators. And choosing a Z is equivalent to choosing an associator. So any associator corresponds to an isomorphism between these two things. So the set of all such associators, let me kind of put wrap it with a wrap, with not a wrap, with a ribbon, okay, so that they don't escape. But now the set of all such things is the set of associators to degree m, to be precise. Okay?
How is n determined?
Any m.
N.
N, no n in the business. This is m too. Oh. There is never an M, an N, only an M. Okay? So, but now, you see, I already had kind of one group action acting on the set of associators. It's more or less a group action. It's not quite transitive, the action, and it works only in the non-horizontal case, but it's sort of a group action acting on the set of associators. Now I get two more. Because the moment an associator... Okay, the moment I tell you that an associator is an isomorphism between two objects, the set of isomorphisms between a pair of isomorphic objects is always has two groups acting on it. What? Which? What are these two groups?
Can you repeat?
If I have two things and they're isomorphic, it doesn't matter what are these two things, okay? Two groups and they're isomorphic, the set of isomorphisms between them has two group actions acting on it. What are these two group actions?
On domain and on the range?
Yeah, the automorphisms of the domain and the automorphisms of the range. So the group of automorphisms here acts on the set of isomorphisms and also the group of automorphisms here. Okay? So the set of associators is a homogeneous space in two different ways. It's once on the right, once on the left, sort of. It has two group actions, two groups acting on it simply transitively. Okay? And the two groups are called the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, So this is the GT side and the graded version of the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, which is on the right-hand side. And if you've ever seen the phrase Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, sorry, this is to degree M. Grothendieck-Teichmuller to degree M and GRT to degree M. The actual Grothendieck-Teichmuller group is the limit of these groups as M goes to infinity, some sort of inverse limit of these groups.
But simple transitivity of this group action is
obvious. Absolutely obvious.
I'm sorry, why?
Because it's a property of isomorphism and automorphisms. If you have two automorphisms, and I want to find a, sorry, if I have two isomorphisms, and I want to find an automorphism of this space, I just go here and back.
Too obvious.
It's completely tautological.
It's too obvious.
Okay. It's completely tautological, yet, you know, there is tons of literature about the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group and how it acts on associators and da-da-da-da-da-da. That's where it all, that's it. That's the whole story. Okay? And by the way, nothing here is very special to parenthesized braids. And, you know, there are analogous things for parenthesized tangles, for any other, for any of the many other things that we will do. So basically, each time we will talk about a finite type theory, it will automatically come with with its Grothendieck-Teichmuller group. So they're kind of, but the classical one, the one that everybody talks about, is this one.
And is anything known about this group? It's generators or relations or stuff like that?
So there are conjectures aplenty, or at least some conjectures. I don't know, it's an active field of research. So there is a conjecture by Deligne, I believe, that, or maybe by Drinfeld originally, sorry, I'm not sure, that the Lie algebra of this group, so I described it as a group, but it has, there is a sense, but there is a way to infinitesimalize it, and then you get a Lie algebra, and the claim is that the Lie algebra is the free Lie algebra on one generator in every odd degree, except one. Yeah. So this is the conjecture, and I think it's still a conjecture.
And why the names Grothendieck and Teichmuller?
This really takes me. Okay, the answer is, okay, here's one answer. There was just a special semester at the Newton Institute on the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group.
So I should go watch.
So watch some of the videos. No, I can't give a better answer, I'm afraid. Sorry. Okay?
But these two people have nothing to do with it. Grothendieck and Teichmuller.
So I think I lied to you in a slight way. Okay, so I said this is the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, and that there are many other Grothendieck-Teichmuller groups for many other finite type theories, but in fact there are two things that are often called the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group. That's one, and the other is slightly different. So Grothendieck and Teichmuller have something to do with the other Grothendieck-Teichmuller group. And the two groups are are defined by the exact same equations. So, I mean, I didn't write the equations for the group, I only wrote the equations for the set of isomorphisms, but you can turn it to a definition of the group in terms of equations. So the other Grothendieck-Teichmuller group is defined using the exact same equations, except they are interpreted in a different place. They're interpreted in a different space. So we've seen this before, right? I mean, so the pentagon, every time I wrote a pentagon, I really meant two possibilities, either horizontal chords or not necessarily horizontal chords. So in a similar way, you can in a different direction, you can interpret the same equations in a different way, and then it's the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group. And it really does have to do with Grothendieck and Teichmuller. So it's the analogous thing becomes a group of automorphisms of automorphisms of, what is it called, the etal pi 1 of pi of RP 1 minus 3 points or something like that. And I could be, I'm now out of my pond, so out of my puddle, so I could be saying slightly wrong things. But it comes from some, the other Grothendieck-Teichmuller group has some algebraic geometric meaning, and it's written in the exact same equations, but they're interpreted in a different space.
I mean, the closest sort of that I can think of is that we're considering grades. Grades are pi 1 of moduli spaces of spheres with marked points. And it could be analogous that you're now looking at just moduli spaces of curves, and pi 1 of the moduli spaces of curves, which are just mapping
classes. I'm out of my pond, out of my puddle. You know, if again, look up the special semester at the Newton Institute. Okay? Okay. How much time do I have? So what I really, I have three more things I wanted to talk about. It's clearly not all of them will fit. So, I can either go back to talking about knotted trivalent graphs and explain why they are, again, the same as associators, or... No, let me end with something relatively light, okay? So, and again, we're falling behind, but it's not a big surprise. There are two ways in... Wait, you know what? Sorry. Did I take a picture? I don't think so. There are two ways in which I am deviating, not fulfilling the promises of the first day. Okay? So, in the first day, I said, there will be topology, it will go to combinatorics by some universal construction which I call grr. Okay? And this goes to low algebra once you choose a Lie algebra, so once you choose a G. And if you want to, so the functor takes thing to thing, but if you want a map between the two things, then this map will be called Z, and it will be called high algebra. Okay, so maybe let's pause and see what of that has been realized. Also, I told you that this will be done three times, for U, for V, and for W, and I'm now in the U column, okay, still. But which of this have I done so far? Okay, so topology is braids or parenthesis braids or tangles or parenthesized tangles. I think you got it. Combinatorics is core diagrams or parenthesized core diagrams, modulo 4t. Again, I think it's clear. High algebra, I think you should agree. You know, to construct a Z from here to here, I had to solve the pentagon, etc. And that's the high, that's what I call high algebra, or that's high algebra in this instance. There will be other high algebras later, but at the moment, this is the high algebra. The two places the two things I haven't yet explained is, what is grr? Okay? So I got from topology to combinatorics by slightly a roundabout way. Okay, I kind of said, let's look at finite type invariants, let's look at the analog of, this will inspire us to define a space of core diagrams. But eventually, when I went from PAB to PACD, it wasn't at all canonical. I just declared what PACD is. Okay, but I claim it's not a declaration, it's forced by the structure. So I still owe you the grr part. Okay, and the other things that I half owe you is, well, I told you how the combinatorics relates to Lie algebras, but I did it only in the case of a circle and choosing a representation, and it's a bit kind of, I've done it only in a minor, in a small part. I need to tell you more. Okay? So I think, is it clear where we are? Okay, I mean, there's still a lot to go, but that's where we are. So now I want to sort of do low algebra better. Maybe not quite right, but at least better. Okay? So here's what I want to do. I want to tell you that given G, given a Lie algebra G, finite dimensional and metrized, and that's exactly the difference between U and W and V, I mean, what type of Lie algebra you end up dealing with, okay? So given a Lie algebra G, there exists a map which I will call the tensor map associated with G. You know what? I mean, if I'll always use calligraphic T, it will get me confused. I'll use lowercase t. Normal t. So there is a tensor map which maps A of n strands to, so A of n strands is what we really got what we really were interested in, right? We started from A of a circle, but the thing that really was needed for the whole theory was A of many strands. Okay? So it will map A of n strands to the universal enveloping algebra of G. Tensored with itself n times. Okay? And furthermore, all the operations we ever considered on A of n strands, plus a few more, become operations in Lie theory, correspond to operations in Lie theory. So I guess my first question is, do I need to define U of G? I need somebody to say yes, because do I need to define the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra? You know what, even if I don't, I will. Okay? So what's the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra? So basically it's the set of all words you can write with letters in the Lie algebra. So it's the set of all words of the form x1, x2, up to xn, okay, where all the xi belong to the Lie algebra. Modulo two things. Modulo, first of all, it's linear in each letter. Okay, so you think of it as products. Okay, so if you replace x2 by x2 prime plus x2 double prime, you can split it. Okay, so the one relation is linearity. And the second relation is that the one letter word x bracket y, so you see, if x and y are elements of the Lie algebra, then x bracket y is again an element of the Lie algebra. So this is a single letter. Okay? So the one letter word x bracket y is equal to the one letter word to the two-letter word xy minus the two-letter word yx. Okay? So basically it's the associative algebra that contains the Lie algebra. Suppose you wanted to find an associative algebra to contain your Lie algebra, that's how you would make it. You would allow arbitrary products of the elements of the Lie algebra, but then you would mod out by the relations that the bracket is a bracket. Okay? So that's the universal enveloping algebra of Lie algebra G. And I know you didn't ask, but I'll say two more things about it. So one, the Lie algebra itself embeds into the universal enveloping algebra by as single letter words. Okay? That's actually not obvious. It's a surprisingly difficult theorem. Because you see, maybe these relations, the moment you put relations, you don't know if the relations don't collapse everything. So the statement that they don't collapse everything is not trivial. But it's nevertheless true. It's a consequence of the PBW theorem, the Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt theorem. But it's not obvious. Okay? And the second thing I want you to remember about the universal enveloping algebra is another consequence of the Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt theorem, and that this is isomorphic to the symmetric algebra over the Lie algebra G. But, so it's isomorphic, but only as a vector space. So, first of all, what is the symmetric algebra? The symmetric algebra is, so you see, these were ordered words. The symmetric algebra is the same, but you don't insist, but the letters are not ordered. So unordered words. Unordered words in G. Okay? Again, modulo linearity, but definitely not modulo this relation, because this relation doesn't make any sense. This relation, so in order to phrase it, you need the ordering. Okay? So it's so basically here xyz is equal to xzy. Okay? Now this is an algebra and this is an algebra. This is an algebra by concatenation. This is an algebra also by concatenation, but then forgetting the order. But they are not the same algebra. They are only the same as vector spaces. In fact, the product here is definitely not commutative. Well, unless the Lie algebra, unless the bracket is zero, the product here is not commutative. But the product here is always commutative. So they're not the same. What is the isomorphism? By the way, this is also called the Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt theorem. It's essentially the same theorem. But why is the isomorphism? The isomorphism has an easy side. This is easy. And the other side is hard. So basically, if you have an unordered word, you can map it to the average of all ways of ordering it. Okay? The other way is non-trivial. Okay?
Why can two averages be the same?
What?
If you have two unordered words, you take their averages, why can't they be the same? As in, why is this map this way injected?
Because I can construct an inverse. But I promise that it's a hard construction, so but this is the PBW theorem. Okay? I don't know, you know, you could have asked the same question when I was talking about a single letter, right? In fact, this inclusion is just that inclusion, is just that map for single letter words, okay? And it's not even obvious that this inclusion is an injection. Now, by the way, if you want an indication that this is a difficult theorem, sort of, it must use the Jacobi identity somewhere, because so in the phrasing of the theorem, the Jacobi identity is not used. Right? So in principle, I could make the same statement for any bilinear product, not necessarily a bracket. So whenever you have an algebra, you could define its enveloping algebra to be by the exact same thing, by the exact same definition. Okay? But you see, But that would prove that but then if I could prove that this map is an injection, then I could prove that any bracket is a commutator, therefore satisfies the Jacobi identity, therefore I could prove that every algebra is a Lie algebra. Okay? So therefore, this proof of that statement must depend on the Jacobi identity. But if you look at the statement, it doesn't have the Jacobi identity in it. So something intricate must be going on. Sorry, I hope you bought this. But anyway, well, if you bought it or not, I still owe you this map. But this map is actually sort of by now easy. Well, or easy. I don't know if by now, but it's easy. So I'll define it by example. So if I have a core diagram on three strands, and the chords will have to be white as well. Okay? The chords are organized, say, this way. Okay? I'll do the exact same thing that I did before. Namely, I'll label these with small lowercase Latin letters. So this will be A prime, B prime, C, C prime. And I will label the ends, same here, so D, D prime, except now I will not bother with the Latin, with the Greek letters. No Greeks here, no, nobody is offended. Okay? And then I will map it to okay, the usual thing. So around each vertex, I will put an FABC. Well, there is only one vertex, so there is only one FABC. But then I will read three words in the universal enveloping algebra. Well, the first one along the first one, the second along the second, the third along the third. So the first word will be D, B prime, A prime. So I chose a basis, if you remember. I think it was called, what did I call the basis element? X sub D?
XA.
So this will be X sub D. So XD, XB prime, XA prime. This is the word in the first tensor factor. So now tensor, the word in the second tensor factor will be XD prime. And the word in the third tensor factor will be XC prime. Okay? That's it. Oh, sorry. I also need a metric. Sorry, I had the wrong index count. So I need the metric over here. So multiply this by TAA prime, TBB prime, TCC prime, TDD prime. Now it's it. And use the Einstein summation convention. Okay? Now what? What did I want to say? Oh, I have to check that this is well defined. Essentially, the only thing I really need to check is the STU relation. And the STU relation becomes the definition of the universal enveloping algebra. So the bracket regarded as a single letter word is the, well, basically, this relation becomes, this is equal to this minus that. Okay? So, in lots of places in representation theory, you end up doing things with the universal enveloping algebra. So, many of these things can be done at the level of diagrams. That's first thing, okay? Maybe an example. So here is something that's done in, no, you know what? I'll take a picture and, sorry, am I out of time?
So,
okay, so 2 more minutes. So just one word, or just really a few words. So the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra, you may know, is a co-commutative co-algebra. Okay? Enough to say that it's a co-algebra. So given any Lie algebra, U of G is a co-algebra. So an algebra means that there is a map from UG tensor UG back into UG, and of course there is such a map, just the concatenation. But the co-algebra means that there is a map going the other way. There is a map from U of G to U of G tensor U of G, and I have to tell you what it is. And the map is the split words into split words. So an element here is a word, XYZ. And it gets mapped to all ways of splitting the letters between the left and the right component. So it will be X tensor YZ, but keeping their order. So let me actually do it in a more interesting one. So Y goes to the left, and X and Z go to the right. So basically, you choose each one whether it goes to the left or to the right, but otherwise they keep their order. So plus X tensor YZ plus XYZ tensor the empty word, 1, plus all choices. Okay? So this means that there exists a map DI from U of G tensor to the N to U of G tensor to the N plus 1. And this is for every I between 1 and N. This is the map that applies the coproduct coproduct is often called delta. So this is the map that applies the coproduct to the ith component. So in other words, this is the map 1 tensor 1, the identity tensor, the identity tensor, the identity, except at the ith component, you do delta. Okay? And I think it's obvious what's the claim that I want to make now, right? So A of n things goes to A of n plus 1 things via di. This goes to u of g to the n. This goes to u of g to the n plus 1 via the tensor map. And here there is a standardly algebraic map, and the claim is that the diagram commutes. Okay? And I think even this is obvious, right? I mean, if you sum over all ways of lifting chord ends, it amounts to deciding each of these generators gets to choose where to go. So the only reason I'm saying it is to say that all complicated equations that we might have considered could be interpreted in Lie theory. At the moment, they're not terribly interesting in Lie theory, but later they will become interesting in Lie theory. Okay. Sorry, that's it. Oh, sorry, except you would think that they are interesting in Lie theory. Sorry, it depends on your taste. Okay. Okay, sorry. So let's meet again tomorrow. Sorry for running a bit over time.